everyone, and welcome to the Keep or Cut podcast, a pitcherless podcast. I'm here with Chad Young, as always. Chad, what's going on, man?
Not much. I'm just enjoying the continued success from my Guardians. I thought they'd be better than they were last year, and I thought they could be a good team. I don't know. I don't know that I pictured like this rotation with like Ben Lively is practically our ace and Carlos Carrasco is still somehow holding down a rotation spot into the end of June and Tristan McKenzie can't pitch and Shane Bieber is hurt. Like, I don't know. This isn't how I anticipated it going. And yet they've moved back within, I think, one game of the best record in the American League. So,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they're 7.5 up in the division. Bybee is looking great. And yeah, ever since Jose Ramirez like just went off, the whole team has kind of gone off. And Stephen Kwan is what the heck? Is he gonna bat 400 this year?
I commented this yesterday. If Stephen Kwan hadn't had his hamstring injury and missed, I think he missed about a month, he'd be in the MVP conversation. Like, he's like sixth in the AL in position player war, despite having like 60% of the playing time of all the guys above him. He's second in the AL in WRC plus. And that ignores the fact that he's a gold glove left fielder and an elite base runner. So, you know, is he going to maintain that level of production all year? I doubt it. We're getting into now like an analysis of Kwan, but I've talked about this probably on the show before. I think I have, that he's a good enough hitter that he should be, in my opinion, cheating more often. He should be taking hard swings more often than he does just to try to lace a double down the line, try to hit a home run, knowing that if he swings and misses, like, who cares? He can afford to swing and miss more than he does, because even with two strikes, he's like, all right, I'll just put the ball in play now. And sure enough, he has matched his career high in home runs. He has 217 plate appearances. Last year in 718 plate appearances, he had 5 home runs. The year before that in 638 plate appearances, he had 6. This year he has 6 in 217 plate appearances. Like, he's on pace for like a 15-ish home run season. He won't get to as many plate appearances because of that lost month, but like, he's hitting the ball a lot with a lot more authority, a lot more often. And it's not necessarily showing up as higher exit velocities or even not that much of a higher hard hit rate, but he's barreling the ball more because I assume he's just finding more opportunities to say, forget it. I'm looking for this pitch. And if I get it, I'm going to try to hit it out, and it's working.
And fantasy managers are loving it, because we'll get to this later, but outfield has been just as thin as we kind of anticipated it being. Yeah. And then you sprinkle in the injuries, it's been a disaster. So Stephen Kwan has been a beacon. He's been a bright light there. Red Sox playing well, but they're not worth breaking down because they are not having the season of the Guardians. I'm looking forward to the MVP race, though. You brought it up. I think it's going to be like an all-timer at this rate with Judge and Soto and Henderson. And Jose Ramirez could easily enter that conversation as well. I think those first three names they're just having crazy, crazy seasons. Yeah. So this is episode 40. So we're looking at players who wore number 40 in MLB history and dedicating the episode to them. And I think there's one obvious answer here. He was a Red Sox and he was a Guardian. And that is Bartolo Colon, who wore the number for 19 seasons, had a 46.2 war, and had one of the most memorable home runs, grand slams, I think just home run in MLB history. Yeah. Chad, is there any pushback there on the Bartolo Colon episode?
I don't think so. I think my biggest issue with Colon is not with him. It's with the fact that I feel like people don't give him enough, like, he doesn't get enough recognition as being primarily a Cleveland player when that's the city he spent the most time in his career. Sure. Now, he only spent 6 years there, which it's not like, you know, It's not like he had a 19-year career and 12 of them were in Cleveland or something like that. It was only 6 years. But he didn't spend more than 3 years anywhere else. He just bounced around, which is sort of crazy because, I don't know, you feel like that's where like the phrase journeyman comes from. And you think of a journeyman as like a middling player, has some value on a roster. No team really cares to keep him, but there's always a job for him. Like, that's not who Bartolo Colon was for most of his career. So it's just crazy to me that he ended up 19 years on, let's see, what is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 different teams, I think. Guy just
an all-star for four
found a new home every year,
which is pretty cool.
He was an all-star for four different teams, I said.
Yeah, he was an all-star with the Mets, with the Athletics, with the Angels, and with the Guardians. He, of course, won a Cy Young Award with the Angels all the way back in 2005. So, yeah, journeyman who had a lot of success.
And had 2 years as like a top 10 Cy Young vote getter. Two in Cleveland, one in Oakland at age 40. And it's just sort of wild that he had the career he did with so many different teams, so many different places, all while being really good.
Yeah.
Like, he was an all-star at age 43 with the Mets.
He went 15-8. Yeah. And honestly, it looks like a lot of his, like, if you looked at his career numbers, it'd be like, they're actually not that impressive. It's important to keep in mind he played until he was 45. And other than that age 43 season, it looked like his post 40 numbers really dragged down his career averages. But
He had some weak years in it. Like, so after he won that Cy Young in LA, his next like four seasons, so I'm just looking, like, his FIP those next four seasons was 5.33, 4.70, 4.34, 5.70. ERAs, one of those years was under four, the others were over four, two were over five. Like, he was pretty bad for that, like, this one random stretch from age like 32 to 35, and then got good again. his career is just, it's just a weird career that probably contributed also to all that moving around, because all of a sudden he you know, it's a little less easy to trust that he's going to continue to perform, right? I mean, we see that with older players who, you know, we think about it from fantasy all the time, like, this guy had this, you know, two down years, and now all of a sudden he looks good again. Is he actually good again, or is this just a dead cat bounce kind of thing? And so you think about guys in fantasy like Paul Goldschmidt, JD Martinez, probably Nolan Arenado entering that group now, where like every year, even in keeper leagues, right, they're available every year because nobody really wants to keep those guys because no one's really sure how good they are, how old they are. I mean, we know how old they are, but like how much their age has caught up to them. And Colon probably went through some of that. You know, if you're mediocre from 32, 33, 33 to 35, and all of a sudden you're good again at like 38, it's really hard for the Yankees, who he was pretty good for at age 38, to be like, yeah, we got to keep this guy around. He's still an ace. And so he goes to Oakland for a couple of years and he's good there for 2 years. And they also are like, all right. You know, and then he's with the Mets for 3 years. And then you hit that point where it's like, nobody is really confident that they've got an ace on their hands or even a top of the rotation type guy on their hands just because there's this history of bad performance. I don't know. It's the only thing I think of that would have driven all that bouncing around for Colon.
Whatever the case is, Bartolo Colon, this is for you. And that takes us to our new regular segment, which we still haven't come up with a fun name for it yet. And we obviously didn't have an episode last week. I was getting my floors redone. My house is like still a mess trying to put it all back together.
Jeez.
That's all right. Well, it looks great. It's just now, you know, restructuring everything. But we did our player of the week 2 weeks ago. Tatis Jr. was my pick. Chad went with Elliot Ramos, who has not slowed down.
No, he's not.
I know who I wanted to go with this week. I was torn between two different players. I'm not going to say either, just in case you picked one, I'll go with my other. So Chad, who is your player of the week for this week's episode of Keeper Cut?
So I am going to go with a pitcher because the guy you put in the notes wasn't a pitcher and we haven't had a pitcher yet for player of the week. So I thought, you know,
sure,
we shouldn't wait too long for that. I'm going with Hunter Brown.
Nice.
And so Hunter Brown, you know, player of the week is a weird one for a starting pitcher because unless they happen to have a start, you know, a two-start week, they're only going to throw a few innings. But six-inning start against the White Sox. Yeah, it's the White Sox, I know. Six strikeouts, no walks in those six innings. He did give up a single run on a home run. But what really sort of makes him my pick is if you go back to the start before that, he is now in his last 13 innings, had 15 strikeouts and zero walks with 12 hits over 13 innings. That's good. That's what you want from a pitcher, right? Even with that home run allowed, like a home run over a 13 inning stretch is not a problem for a starting pitcher in the modern game. So like, it's pretty good. And on top of that, I know his overall numbers have been bad, and I know he was terrible to start the year, but if you go back over his last 10 starts, actually I should say it's his last 10 starts, including a follow appearance. So it's his last 11 appearances, which includes his last 10 starts, 60 and two thirds innings. He has a 3.41 ERA, 3.82 FIP, 3.17 XFIP over that stretch. He has struck out 71 hitters in 60 innings. He's walked 19. That's pretty great. The only issue he's really had going back that far is the long ball. He's given up 9 home runs over those 11 appearances, which is a 1.34 home run per 9, which is not good. It's not terrible, but it's not great. But like, the overall numbers are excellent. I mean, 10.5 strikeouts per 9 and under 3 walks per 9. Like, that is phenomenal work. Now, I do want to note that, like, if you read Nick Pollock's daily pitcher roundup, the SP roundup, he featured Brown on the 19th after, actually, I guess the article probably came out on the 20th, but after Brown's last start, which was on the 19th. And he's not as sold. And so I think it's worth noting that there's still some concerns there. He had questions about Brown's command. Despite the lack of walks, he felt like he wasn't necessarily spotting pitches well. He bounced his curve a few times, it sounds like. Some hard hit balls. He is basically saying that this is... are you familiar with Nick's Vargas rule?
I am not.
So the Vargas rule is inspired by Jason Vargas. And the idea is that when a pitcher is pitching at a high level you didn't expect, you just ride the hot streak, basically. You keep starting him until something breaks and you realize, yeah, this guy was never that good. So it's an interesting take from Nick, because what Nick is basically saying is, Hunter Brown is not actually a good pitcher. He's just a mediocre pitcher to a bad pitcher on a hot streak. And that's from a fantasy perspective, right? I think, you know, there's a big gap between being good from a fantasy perspective and good from an overall perspective. Now, it's worth noting that Nick tends to write for like your standard 12-team Yahoo league, which is a pretty shallow league. For most of our listeners who are doing keeper leagues, they're a little bit deeper, you're doing an auto new league, like that's a different story, and Brown is more valuable in those formats than he is for what Nick's saying. But it's still worth noting that, like, as good as Brown has been recently, he still has his detractors, and those, you know, Nick is a really good pitching analyst. He knows more about pitching than I will ever know. And so when he says, you know, when I see a guy like Hunter Brown and think like, wow, he's turned a corner, like we know the talent's there, this is it. And Nick's like, yeah, I'd pump the brakes. It causes me to go back and like be a little bit more cautious. That said, I'm buying low on Hunter Brown if I still can.
Yeah, and that's going to be the key there is can you still buy low? Hunter Brown, obviously coming into the season, a pretty exciting pick, was a top 200 guy. I jumped off. I think most people did. Why wouldn't you at the beginning of the season? Like those of you that held on to Hunter Brown, like, I'm happy for you. It looks like things are turning around, but what did it cost you up until this point? I understand being hesitant because, you know, one of the first stats I like to look at for a pitcher is swing strike rate, and it's still not amazing for Hunter Brown, despite it feeling like his strikeouts have picked up lately. But he is, for whatever reason this year, and this particular statistic is not necessarily sticky year to year, but he is generating a lot of soft contact. Guys are having a hard time barreling him up. The average exit velocity against is really low. It's not league best, but it's trending that direction. So, I mean, if it is just a pitcher who's mediocre on a hot streak, well, even in that case, he's still worth picking up in your shallower leagues and in your long-term formats. I'm kind of with you. I guess I'd be interested in buying low. We may have waited too long to buy low.
Yeah. I mean, just as an example, like he went up for auction in the Fangraph staff league on a new league 13 that we're both in.
I nominated him 13 and I regret days ago. Not getting him. Yeah.
Well, he went, it's almost exactly 2 weeks ago. You not only didn't get him, you had the third highest bid. You bid $14 on him.
Yeah.
There was an $11 bid below you. Niv and I bid $15 above you. And then, who is it? Carlos Marcano bid $21. He got him for 16. And the thing is, as of right now, that was before those two starts that I mentioned. The 15 strikeouts over 13 innings without a walk in his last two starts. Like, that's what he's gotten since he picked up Hunter Brown. It's worked out pretty well for him, even at $16. So,
yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so. That's a regret of mine. I had some money to burn in there, and I still have Mike Trout who I can drop and free up a ton of space. I should have got him, but whatever. I'm going to go with Francisco Alvarez for my player of the week. I wanted to go with Jaron Duran because I'm a huge homer honk guy, but and Duran is one of the leaders in war in all of baseball. He's like fourth or something like that, which is just freaking awesome. But I found Francisco Alvarez to be a little bit more interesting. Coming back from injury, he had the thumb injury, wrist injury, something like that. And I got him in a lot of spots. First of all, if you look at the catcher position, obviously it's been disappointing, just like it kind of is every year. But we've lost two of the guys at the top of draft boards in JT Realmuto and Wilson Contreras. You know, Gabriel Moreno just went down. Luis Campusano just went down. Ivan Herrera in your deeper leagues went down. Elias Diaz went, like, catcher is really thin. So to see one performing pretty well, even in a short sample, I think is really important. And Alvarez has been incredible. So player of the week, I'm looking at it now Monday through Sunday. So like a head-to-head matchup, that's how I'm going to view this now. He's still striking out quite a bit, but he went 10 for 19 this week. Two homers, six RBI, three runs, and three walks. Like I said, he's still striking out a little bit. That strikeout rate this week was around 27%. But he's tearing the cover off the ball. I mean, his average exit velocity this week, which is like a silly thing to look at for a week, right, was 98 miles an hour. I mean, that, like, every time he touches the ball, it explodes. This might be my favorite stat of the week. I'm gonna really enjoy this, just looking at 1 week stats every week. WRC plus of 328. So
that's,
he's 228% better than your average hitter, and the OPS was over 1500. So he had a great week so far. We'll see if he's in the lineup today. Not a lot of catchers play on Sundays, starting catchers anyway. He's already set, you know, looking at more than just this week, which is hard to do because he was hurt for so long. He still has under 100 plate appearances, I believe. He's already set a new max exit velocity for his career this season. I think it's 114 miles an hour. The season-long number suggests his launch angle is kind of out of whack. He's hitting a lot of ground balls, but again, it's a really small sample. One more week like the one that he just had will obviously greatly change that, because over half the balls he hit this week were in the air. This is a guy, he's just 22 years old. He's a top offensive prospect, and this is something that Chad and I have talked about a lot is, you know, hitting prospects in general have just busted all over the place. I mean, it's been an amazing disaster this season, but catchers usually are the ones to come around even last, because they're not only trying to figure out how to hit major league pitching, but they're also in some cases calling games. And in a lot of cases, just busy catching. It's a demanding position every inning. So it takes some time for the bat to come around. But this wasn't just like a top catching prospect. This was a top prospect in all of baseball. Could the breakout be happening? I think that'd be a little premature to say. But he is hitting a groove And if you were like trying to string it together with like Tyler Stevenson and Luis Campusano and stuff like that, and finally your Francisco Alvarez has returned, that's a great feeling. I don't regret trading for Salvador Perez in the keeper cut Ought New Listener League, because Perez has been incredible this season and he was only $3. And OBP, which he normally struggles with, he's actually kind of doing really well this season with an above average OBP. So I'm happy I got Salvador Perez, but somebody cut Francisco Alvarez and I just claimed him for $8. And I actually feel pretty good at this point in time about an $8 Francisco Alvarez in your long-term Ought New format, or well, just an Ought New. So Francisco Alvarez, my player of the week, pretty excited about him. I hope he keeps it going and stays on the field.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you talk about catchers always sort of a sad position. I actually think it's more disappointing this year than it's been in years because my expectations were higher than they'd been in years.
That's fair.
And so you start looking at, you know, it's not just the injuries, but the list of names of guys who, like, I thought Keibert Ruiz was going to break out. I thought Gabriel Moreno would have a good season. I thought Bo Naylor was going to break out. Like, there's just a long list of guys
Garver,
who have.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah. You just go on and on, right? I mean, like, and now there's some other guys performing that we didn't expect, but it just, like, I went into every league with, like, I've got two catchers I feel really good about, and most of them have been terrible. And it's just been very, very strange. And then you add to that that some of the guys who've been good are getting hurt, and it's like, oh, I just it's been a rough year at catcher across the board.
This is kind of a stupid, like, you know, you can make numbers say what you want them to say, but I'm in 21 leagues. I have Will Smith in none. I have Adley Rutschman in one. I have William Contreras in one. Where I have Adley Rutschman, that's a 12-team dynasty roto. That team's in first place. Where I have William Contreras, that's a 12-team keeper head-to-head. That team is in first place. I'm not saying it's a direct correlation, right? But to have one of those elite catchers this season does feel like quite an advantage.
Yeah, it does, for sure.
We've gone through our Bartolo Colon episode. We've talked about our players of the week. We've talked about the Guardians. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to dive into some guys who you may be thinking about cutting. Welcome back, folks. Keeper Cut Podcast, episode 40. Shout out Bartolo Colon. We don't normally bring up the episode dedication at all during the episode, but I'm going to keep bringing up Bartolo Colon because I just think he's awesome. Chad and I wanted to take a look at some players who, like, It obviously depends on how deep your league is, but there's certain guys we draft, particularly for me, the numbers in the top 200. When you take a guy in the top 200, you're really hoping that player stays in your roster for at least the majority of the season, if not the entire season. If we narrow that down to the top 120, then, like, those are guys who, they better stay on my roster for the entire season unless there's an injury. It's just out of my control. So we're going to look outfield, starting pitcher, and infield, kind of all the infield positions together, at three players who you drafted in the top 150, maybe in some cases it's just the top 200, but players you drafted pretty highly, who at this point you're maybe still holding on. But guys, it's June. You're listening to this on June 24th. Like, it may be time to finally cut bait, and we're going to talk about players who we might be interested in replacing them with. So let's start by looking at outfield and talking about the guys who we may be thinking about cutting. Now, the first one is straightforward. Mike Trout, looking at NFBC ADP, he was the 61st player off the board, which at the time I thought was like a steal. People might remember me saying, like, if you took Nolan Jones over Mike Trout, you were a fool. Turns out I'm the fool, because Trout once again got hurt. And the most recent update is that there is no update. There's no timeline. Things are going slower than expected. And the problem is, before he got hurt, he was better than what you would even expect from Mike Trout. He was absolutely tearing the cover off the ball this season. So Mike Trout may be a guy you're considering cutting, particularly in Ought New. I already mentioned I have a really expensive one that would free up like $25, $26 for my team. George Springer, who Chad has never been a fan of, and he's been right the last couple of years and looks very right this year. Springer's not only having a terrible season, but recently in June, why would you be cutting this guy? Well, in June, he's only batting 141 with one homer in a 26% strikeout rate. And then we've got Cedric Mullins, who Recently looks improved. I still think he's a trade candidate. It seems like whenever the Orioles are involved in trade conversations or trade rumors, I should say, it's like it's going to be one of the prospects or it's going to be Ryan Mountcastle. I think Cedric Mullins is a guy who is likely to get moved, but he's improved in June. He's batting .271. He has stolen you 5 stolen bases, so he's maintaining some kind of relevancy, but doesn't play every day. And on the season, he's batting .208, and he's batting towards the bottom of the lineup. So, and he had an ADP, by the way, of 142. George Springer's ADP was 116. So all guys we took in the top 150. I wanted to include Castellanos, Langford, or Rosarena, but all three of those guys are much improved in June, where I think if you held on this long, you're not dropping them now. Those first three guys, though, Chad, Trout, Springer, Mullins, what are we doing with them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends a little bit on format and depth of league, obviously, but like Trout, especially in redraft, like I guess we shouldn't talk too much about redraft. That's not our lane. But if it were redraft, Trout's an easy drop for me. There's just no upside. Like, he's without a timetable. It is June 23rd as we're recording. When he gets a timetable, the first thing we're going to hear is like there's some improvement, and with a couple more weeks, he could be ready for, you know, to start running and swinging a bat, and then he can go on a rehab. Like, we're at least a month away is what no timetable means. So,
and it feels longer, right?
Right. It's probably, you're probably looking at a month of time out of him. Right? You might get him back September 1st, something like that. And you might not.
And it's worth mentioning, this is just if you don't have, if you need the space, right? If you have an IL spot and you're like, just stash Mike Trout, that's fine.
Right. No, yeah, that's true. I mean, if he's not impacting your ability to field a roster, then who cares? But if he is, yeah, I would move on. And so then you look at, you know, keeper leagues, you have that added question of, you know, do I want to give up his long-term value? And if you drafted him where his ADP was, he has no long-term value. Like, his draft cost is not going to go up next year, not after this. So then I don't care about that. If you picked him up, let's say someone else dropped him and you picked him up thinking like, oh yeah, I'll grab this guy and stash him. I don't know that I'm that excited about stashing him even for a late pick as a keeper. I get that there will be value there, right? If you picked him up as a free agent, he's a last round pick to keep or something like that. I get why you'd be like, you're going to keep him. If it comes to that, you're going to keep him. Are you going to feel good about keeping him? Or are you going to be sitting there thinking like, I don't know, like I'm looking at like our listener leagues where we have 9 keepers. 9 keepers is a decent number of keepers. Even for a last round pick, and you know, last round pick in those leagues, you probably have like 4 last round picks you're keeping. So he ends up being like a 25th instead of a 28th or something like that. Are you looking at Mike Trout for a 25th round pick next year and thinking like, yes, so glad I've got him? Or are you thinking like, wow, this could be great value? Or I could be sitting here on June 23rd, 2025, having the same discussion of, can I wait any longer on Mike Trout? Do I have to cut him? And at the end of the day, for me, I think I'm ready to move on from Trout and just let him go. I understand that someone else will probably pick him up, and that person will probably keep him for a late pick. And there is a chance that that person is going to get a huge value next year because of that. I can't just keep sitting on a guy if I need that roster spot. And the reality is, like, I need that roster spot everywhere. Like, even I have leagues where I'm like, I have 5 IL spots and 8 injured players. So, yeah, it's time.
That's what's killing me with Ronald Acuña Jr. in Listener League 2, because, like, over my dead body, am I going to give someone a free Ronald Acuña Jr.? But my dead body might appear, because I'm running out of space, man. Like, Verlander's on the IL, Real Muto's on the IL. Like, almost my entire team all year, it's just been, my IL has just been rotating who's on it and who's not. And now it looks like I'm going to lose Giancarlo Stanton, who, like, people can scoff at that. First of all, this league is super thin. Second of all, Stanton's having a pretty nice year by his standards, at least relative to the last few. So if he does land on the IL, like, I'm out of options. I have to cut Ronald Acuña Jr., which means somebody's going to get him for free. But if you're trying to win this year, like, that's just a bullet you have to bite. And so I guess I'm telling all of our listeners, get ready, because you're about to spend all of your fab on a free Ronald Acuña Jr. But like, I can't hold on to him anymore, especially since I can't keep him. I was basically just holding on to him to keep him away from everybody else.
Which league is that?
That's Listener League 2. I already tried to get the one in Listener League 1. That was the steal of the century. If I knew he was going to be dropped, I would have saved all of my fab from the season and bid $100 on him. I bid everything I had, and I didn't get him. Somebody got him for like 66. That was Roto League 1. But in the head-to-head league, League 2, I have him, and just I just have to drop him. I can't hold on any longer.
I mean, in that league, just, you know, we have three IL spots, and like that league, I am sitting on Shane Bieber, who I'm having a similar conversation about in my head. I am sitting on Clayton Kershaw, who I'm having a similar conversation in my head. I have Zach Gallen. I have Kerry Carpenter, Mookie Betts, and Lars Nootbaar all injured. In Listener League 1, the Roto 1, I think we also have three IL spots there. I again have Bieber. I have Trout there on my IR, and I need to move him. I probably need to drop him because I also have Wilson Contreras, Michael Harris, and Lars Nootbaar all injured. I've got Trey Turner, who I haven't been able to activate yet. I don't know why I didn't. How long has he been back? Did I just miss a week with him? I told him. No.
Yeah, you basically.
He came back. I could have activated him this week. I missed that he was going to be ready. So I lost this week. I haven't lost more than that, but that'll help because I can move him out of an IR spot and open one up. And then you and I are in a dynasty league that we co-manage together. And our IL situation is so bad there that our starting second baseman right now is Mookie Betts because we don't have another second baseman on our roster who's healthy. I don't even know if you look at that league. We've been doing pretty well lately. But yeah, Gabriel Moreno was one of our catchers. He's now hurt. We have Betts hurt. Yvonne Herrera was another one of our catchers. He's now hurt. We got Michael Massey and Kerry Carpenter both on the IL. Yu Darvish, Gavin Williams, Blake Snell,
this
Yamamoto.
Team is an infirmary.
Patrick Sandoval. We have five IR spots, IL spots. That's the entire list of guys that we have injured. And that's a daily, like it's weekly fab, but it's daily head-to-head roster changes. Mm. And like we're in ninth right now out of 14 teams. I think it's the top six make the playoffs. And so we're like, we have a shot at making the playoffs. But it's also like a legit keep forever dynasty. So I don't know. Like, I'm not dropping Snell or Yamamoto. I guess we could drop Darvish. Patrick Sandoval, you're going to be gone Sunday night.
See ya.
See you later. I don't want to drop Carpenter. Herrera and Moreno, I'm like,
I kind of like those two. Like,
I know. And it's not like there's other options at catcher. So like, what are we going
right.
to do?
But it's like, a two catcher league. So,
and it makes me very sad because I thought Michael Massey was ready to have like a big breakout year, but I think we probably have to think about moving on from him. So like, but then I go and I look at the free agents in this league and it's a 14 team dynasty. Like I said, we have 24 major league spots, 20 minor league spots, and guys who were in your minors who get called up, you don't have to promote. So like our minor leagues include Spencer Arrighetti. Do we have any other active players? I don't think we do. But like other teams have like minor leaguers that are like, so this plays deeper than a 14 team, 24 player major league roster seems like it should. Sorry, it's not 24. It's 30. It's a 30 man roster. So it plays deeper than that seems like it should. And so like, yeah, we should probably, like, maybe Michael Massey isn't a dynasty player we need to be super concerned about holding on to. But then, like, I don't know, our top free agent options are, like, Blake Perkins, Jacob Young, Abraham Toro, Harrison Bader. And by the way, I'm skipping the injured players. Trying to. Eddie Rosario, Will Brennan. Will Brennan's maybe interesting. He's been pretty good lately. We have two injured catchers. Should we pick up a catcher? Gary Sanchez. Ben Rortvedt, Freddie Fermin, Jacob Stallings, Jake Rogers, Carson Kelly.
Freddie Fermin, two homers the other day, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's the guy. But, like, that's the thing is, like, I feel, and it's to bring this back to Trout, since that's where this started. I feel like, yeah, you can't keep Trout, but, like, if you're in a league like that, what? Sure, drop Trout, but for what?
Yeah, that's so true.
It really does depend on the depth of your league. And like, if you're in a really deep league, then there's both less value in dropping Trout and more value in keeping him for a late pick if you're able to do that. And so that's where it gets a little bit fuzzier. Same thing with Acuna. That doesn't apply to Springer or Mullins, getting back to those two, because they're not injured. And so they are, you know, best case scenario, sitting on your bench. Worst case scenario, they're actively hurting your numbers in your lineup. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't have Springer anywhere, as you can imagine, as you discussed. He's not a guy I've ever been a big fan of. His walk rate is up. It's as high as it's been since 2019. It's like the third or fourth best of his career. His walk rate is down from last year and below his career strikeout rate. He's just not hitting the ball hard at all. He's on a 4-year decline in his exit velocity. His max EV this year is 110.6. That's not terrible. His worst max EV for a season in his career before this year was 113.6. So it's, you know, it's not bad, but it points to decline. His hard hit rate is down at 33.7%. That would be a career low. His barrel rate is at 5.4%. That would be a career low. His launch angle is at 9, which is low as it's been since his second year back with Houston. And he was a guy who did need to elevate the ball more back in those early days. Like, I think people almost forget, but like, you know, in 2015, in three quarters of a season, he had 16 home runs. He was like a 20 home run hitter at that point. And then he got the launch angle up, the fly ball rate started to climb, fewer ground balls, and, you know, he became the 30 home run guy that people expected him to be. But Springer, like, there's just a lot that looks bad. But there's all, like, in terms of his quality contact, but then his plate discipline looks good. He has a 218 BABIP. Like, his ground ball rate is super high, but part of that is, like, his line drive rate probably needs to come back up. Like, it's 16.3%. It probably won't stay that low. So there probably are better days ahead for Springer than what you've seen so far. But, I mean,
can I give you a quick number?
Yeah, well, let me give you one more thing, and then I'll let you give me a quick number too. His WOBA on the year is 260. His ex-WOBA is 311. That's a huge improvement over 260. It's still bad. And so I think there's better days ahead. I'm just not sure there's actually good days ahead.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Because, like you said, his expected WOBA is better by a significant margin, but still not good. George Springer, if you're thinking, like, he's going to get out of this, I don't think it's happening anytime soon. This is a small sample. Sure, he's 1 for his last 11. Who cares? 11 at-bats, whatever. 7 strikeouts. The guy is lost at the moment. And people, it's already June 23rd. So if you've held on this long, like, I don't know. I think there's alternatives out there. I mean, we're going to get into Mullins, but three of the names, we were going to look at names that are rostered in less than 70% of Fantrax leagues. Two of the players that meet that qualification are Jesse Winker and Alec Burleson. I don't even think we need to break those players down. You need to drop George Springer for one of those two immediately. And that's not even a knock on Springer. Those two just look incredible. The one that I'm curious about, because I think it's a conversation, is Chaz McCormick, who Chaz McCormick was also drafted pretty highly and has obviously disappointed and just wasn't even playing that often against righties. But all of a sudden, Chaz McCormick is looking pretty good. He's started against righties, I think, 2 of the last 3 games or something like that. So maybe it's starting to take shape. And the pitcher that he most recently took deep was Corbin Burnes, by the way. All 3 of his homers have come in his last 5 games. So I think Chaz McCormick might be getting hot. And this wasn't a player who I was, like, super excited about. I just thought, pretty safe floor, like, good lineup, the plate appearances should be there. It was like a 2020 guy last year, whatever. Like, seems like a pretty useful player, and in a lot of keeper leagues I had him for a last round pick. He's obviously disappointed. But Chad, are you dropping, if you had him, George Springer for Chaz McCormick, or is that too far? Is that, like, I can't do that, that's too low of a bar?
I guess the reality is I'm not sure I need to go that low, because, like, I'm looking at that guy's 70% and under on Fantrax. So here are some outfielders on Fantrax that I would happily pick up to replace Springer right now. Ryan O'Hearn Davis Schneider, J.J. Bleday, Jesse Winker. Wow. Lars Nootbaar once he's healthy. Bleday's been for good. Sure. Was that who you were? Was that who you were reacting to when I said wow?
I've liked Bleday all the way since back when he was Miami's farm system. It's George Springer. I can't believe this is happening. Like it happens to everybody eventually. Springer's an older player, but that's crazy.
Jock Peterson, Andy Pyes, Alec Burleson. You mentioned. Well, now I'm starting to run out of names. I get down to McCormick becomes sort of a borderline case for me.
Let me give you a real case study because I have Springer in a head to head keeper and I've been holding on to him this whole time. And here are my alternatives because I don't think they're quite as good. Now there's one who I think I'm just going to make the switch. It's a head to head league and it's more than 5x5. It's 7x7, 6x6, I think. So stolen bases aren't quite as important for me, but Luis Ranjifo is available. I think I'm going to make that switch right now.
Okay, I would do that in a second, yeah.
But let's say somebody picked him up before I could. Here are the top healthy outfielders available, and I don't know what my switch would be. Ahmed Rosario, Michael Conforto, Mark Canha, Andrew Benintendi, no chance. I have to scroll down. Then there's Chaz McCormick, who I'd consider. James Outman, who's in the minors but tearing it up. Gavin Lux, Sal Frelick, who's interesting in real life. So like I the percentage thing is one thing, but in active leagues I don't know who's out there.
Like looking now at like below 50% on Fantrax, I think I would rather gamble on the upside from Nelson Velasquez. He's at 46%. At 48% is Will Benson, who I think like he's got 8 home runs and 9 stolen bases in basically a little less than half a season. Like he's going to push a 2020 season. It's going to come with bad rates, I think, but you could pick him up and pick up 10 home runs, 10 steals the rest of the way out of him. Like if we're talking McCormick, I think, you know, Benson is a similar value with a different skill set, right? He's more power speed versus like, McCormick will give you some power, give you some speed, but he's more just like a little bit across the board, whereas I think Benson gives you legit power and speed. Jose Siri, another guy who gives you some power and speed with rates that you're not going to love. Let's see, scrolling further down. Then you get into some guys who it's like, when Parker Meadows gets called back up, and he's going to get called back up at some point, I would take him over Springer.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, Meadows, and they got a few call ups to do because Torkelson is still in the minor. I know he hasn't quite found a swing yet, but that one's disappointing. Chad, I want to put a pin in outfielders so we can get into pitching and infielders. So let's end it with a quick ranking rest of season. I'm going to do three of the names that we just mentioned, or four of the names that we mentioned. I want you to rank for me rest of season in let's say. Just rest of season, because rest of season matters for our keeper leagues too. Chaz McCormick, Cedric Mullins, George Springer, Jackson Churio. Rank those four players rest of season. Obviously, we're not cutting Churio in keeper leagues, so you disregard him. You're not going to drop him for any of these guys, but rank those four rest of season.
Goodness. Boy, Churio hasn't been good, but obviously the upside is, you know, real. It's really hard to separate rest of season from keeper value with Churio. Cause I think if I actually have that choice, Churio is first on my list in a keeper league because of that long-term value. Rest of season. I mean, Churio's got a 108 WRC plus in June. He's starting to show things. So he might be my first choice rest of season. I think the caveat to that is, if you just need speed, then I can understand holding on to Mullins and just, you know, he have 19 stolen bases, right? He could steal 40 by the end of the year. So if you need the speed, I could see that. But otherwise, probably Churio. I'd be real torn between McCormick and Mullins and then Springer last.
Wow. Okay. So the end of George Springer has come. Let's take one more break. And we come back, we're going to talk about starting pitchers and infielders. All right, folks, welcome back. Keeper Cut Podcast, episode 140. Pete Ball, Chad Young shouting out Bartolo Colon in this episode. We're looking at players who went in the top 150 to 200 in drafts back in the winter, back in the spring, and players who, like, we draft in that range, and we're thinking it may finally be time to cut bait here on June 23rd, June 24th. It sounds like we're done with George Springer. We're getting close to that point with Cedric Mullins. We got to talk about starting pitchers. And unsurprisingly, a lot of these might be due to injury, but there's two pitchers here that I wanted to discuss who are, yes, injured, but were also underperforming and at a concerning level. So I mentioned how Chad never liked George Springer. Chad has never liked Walker Buehler either. Buehler has looked like a disaster. Granted, he got shelled, but it wasn't Coors. He landed on the IL with a hip, with hip discomfort, which sounds really concerning, especially for a starter. It's because he was hit by a ball that was put in play, so he should be back soon, but he needs to figure things out because he's been terrible. Justin Verlander was like, fine, he's pitching really mediocre, but he's landed on the IL with neck discomfort. Verlander had an ADP of 157. Buehler had an ADP of 173. And then there's Ryan Pepiot, who started the year so strong, was great for the Dodgers down the stretch last season. I was really beginning to like him. He had an ADP of 195, so he fits the bill of being in the top 200. He just can't find the strike zone anymore. He's walking the yard. He's had an ERA over six. He had an ERA over six in May. That was only through like 11 innings or something. Now in June, he has an ERA over six again for a month. So he has kind of been a disaster. There's a lot more options out there when it comes to pitchers. But believe it or not, in Fantrax, sub 70% rostered, it's not as much as you'd think. I think I still found some names I liked, but Chad, what are we doing with Buehler, Verlander, and Pepiot?
Yeah, so let me start with Buehler, and just to make the comment that, like, my dislike of Buehler, and it was similar with, was a little different than Springer. My dislike of Springer was always that he felt unsustainable to me. He felt like the kind of guy who, when the bottom fell out, it was going to fall out hard, and I didn't want to be stuck holding the bag. And so that's why I mostly stayed away from Springer. Buehler is more that, like, I never thought he was as good as other people thought he was. It's not that I thought he was bad. He's a perfectly fine starting pitcher. He's just not, I didn't think he was going to be an ace long term. I thought he'd be like a solid starting pitcher, and people were treating him like an ace. And I think that, you know, the ERA, the FIP, they are ugly this year. A big part of that is a 23.3% home run per fly ball rate that I have to believe is not entirely his fault. It's probably his fault to some extent, like, but, you know, of his, he's given up 10 home runs on the year. Four of them have been at either Coors or Great American Ballpark. You're going to give up home runs in those stadiums. Like, that's life in those stadiums. Now, unfortunately for him, Dodger Stadium is also a good place for giving up home runs. But I don't think he's as bad as he's looked. I am going to, in his case, tend to believe that the XFIP or the Sierra, which are 4.20 and 4.19, are better reflections of how he's pitched than the 5.84 ERA or the 6.04 FIP. So I think he has been better than he has looked. The problem is, like, the strikeout rate is at 18.5%. The walk rate is at 6%, which is fine, but not great. It's not like, if you're going to have a strikeout rate at 18.5%, your walk rate needs to be at like 3%. Like, otherwise it's just not going to, it's going to be hard to make that work. And on top of that, like, you know, he was throwing over 96. He came up throwing 98 as a rookie, but that was in relief. It was nine total innings, whatever. It was mostly 96 as a starter for 3 years, above 96, pushing 97, and has now been more like mid-95s, 95.3 2 years ago, 95.2 last year, 95.5 this year. And as that's happened, his strikeout rate has gone down for four. This is the fourth consecutive season it's gone down. So from a peak of 29.2% in 2019, it's gone down every year. Went down to 2020, 2021, 2022, and now 2024, because he didn't pitch in 2023. His strikeout minus walk rate has gone down every year since 2019. Like, it's not a great trend. That said, he's an interesting buy low, but you have to buy really low because he's not an ace, and he's not going to be an ace. I do think he can come back and be a solid middle of your rotation type guy, putting up a high threes ERA, but eating innings and pitching pretty well. And if you're in a 5x5, like, you know how many wins he could get with a high threes ERA pitching for the Dodgers? Like, he could get a lot of wins. So I think there's still a lot of value there. The issue is that I think that people will still try to sell him. They'll sell low by saying, like, look, you're buying a possible ace. He isn't there right now, but that's what you're trying to buy. So yeah, I'll sell low. But if you're selling low, saying, like, hey, I'll sell him as a top 50 starting pitcher because we know that he's top 20 if he gets right. I think if he gets right, he's more like a top 30 to 40, say the 35th best starting pitcher, something like that, which means I need to pay like well below that to feel like I'm buying low. And I just don't think you'll be able to do that.
That's fair. I'm not really blown away with what I've seen either. I do worry about long-term, if you have a player like this coming off of Tommy John surgery, can't find the strike zone, wasn't a big strikeout guy beforehand. He's a player who, if I have long-term, I might actually be looking to sell low as opposed to buying low. I think I would look to sell low on Buehler right now. So all three of these guys, Verlander, Buehler, you know, I brought up Pepio. I'm going to give you three names, Chad, just for the sake of time. Which of these three would you look to add if you were looking to replace one of those guys? I've got Matt Waldron, DJ Hers, who I know just got lit up for three homers, but the strikeout to walk ratio looks pretty good. I don't know. I thought he looked, I watched the start because I have him. I thought he looked pretty good. Or Spencer Turnbull, who might be, not might, I think he is re-entering the rotation with the injury to Taiwan Walker, looked pretty good before. Honestly, these are the three names I like the most in under 70% of Fantrax leagues. Do any of those names stick out to you? I know Waldron statistically seems like the obvious choice. He's a knuckleballer though, so I'm a little bit hesitant on guys like that, but you had to drop one of those three. Which of those three are you adding?
I actually think Turnbull is the obvious choice for me.
Wow. Okay.
You go back to the beginning of the year, he was pitching as a starter through basically the month of April with a 1.67 ERA and a 3.24 FIP. He was striking out more than 10 hitters per nine innings. He was walking under three per nine. Home run per nine was fine. He was getting some BABIP help there, which is why the ERA is so much lower than the FIP, but like everything looked good.
Yeah.
And I don't think he is the type of guy whose stuff plays up much in the bullpen. Plus, in his time in the bullpen, he has had, let's see, he's made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He's made 10 appearances out of the pen, and half of those have been 2+ innings. He's only gone exactly one inning 4 times. So he's gone 1 innings 4 times, 1 1/3, and then a 2 2 2/3, and 3 3-inning outings. So it's not like he was, you know, he hasn't been asked to just go out there and like light it up for an inning. Even those times he went for one inning, there was probably a chance he was going out, you know, going for more. He hasn't pitched regularly. His outings have been really sporadic. I don't think that that's helped his numbers. I think if anything, it might have hurt them. Mm-hmm. But even so, his overall line of the year, 2.63 ERA, 3.57 FIP, 3.60 XFIP. He has been good when he's been healthy in the past. I think he's the obvious choice. And I think Waldron, I'm with you, like the knuckleball. The thing that's interesting with Waldron is like part of me is like, well, let's see what happens as people get more used to him. But like nobody's worrying about the knuckleball. They're just not, because he's the only guy who throws it. So like whatever. Why would you practice facing that? But the overall performance, just, you know, a mid-threes ERA, mid-threes FIP, a little bit worse than that XFIP. I do think the home run per fly ball rate could go up because like, you know, a knuckleball that doesn't knuckle the right way can get hit a long way. And he's avoided that for the most part so far. And I don't think that will last. And so I think he ends up with the XFIP looking more reasonable. I just don't think he maintains a 7% home run per fly ball rate. And at that point, he's like, his line right now is like Turnbull with fewer strikeouts. So I'd rather have Turnbull, who I think gets you more strikeouts and is probably more sustainable. That said, I'm happy to have Waldron. Like, if Waldron ends up as like an 8 strikeout per 9, high threes ERA type guy, like, I think that's basically what I just told you I thought Walker Buehler would be, right? So like, you know, I don't know that I'm dropping Buehler to get Waldron, but like, if you want to, like, if you need a pitching right now and you're like, I need innings today, and you make that move, I would kind of get it. I would rather drop one of the other guys, I think, that you talked about to get Waldron. But Turnbull would be my first choice of those three. I think Waldron is probably second. Hers, I don't know really what to make of him. Like, he wasn't very good in AAA this year.
No.
His walk rates, if you look at his minor league walk rates, this guy, his minor league performance would leave you believing he literally has no idea that there is a strike zone. He thinks you're just supposed to throw the ball and see what happens. And at some point, now, that said, he is now in his last two starts. Yeah, he gave up those three home runs at Colorado. He's now gone 9 2/3 innings with 18 strikeouts and no walks over his last two starts. I don't really know what to make of that, because like, there is literally nothing in this guy's history that implies that he should be able to avoid walks. But if hers is avoiding walks, then that's really interesting. Like, that's a huge change from what we've seen from him in the past. So I don't know. I think I could make a case for it. But I don't know. I guess what I'm getting at is, like, I think all three of those guys are interesting in different ways. I think Turnbull is probably the safest. Hers maybe has the most upside, but is the biggest risk. And Waldron is the most fun.
I think that's a fair way to look at it. I want to go back to Turnbull just for a second. But I guess the thing to say on DJ Harris is I want to give him one more outing, right? If he goes out against San Diego this week and blows, then like, I'm done. See you later. Don't need you. But you're right. The lack of walks of the last two outings, despite the last one being so homer prone, is intriguing, especially since, like, I don't know about you, but in a lot of my teams, it just feels like strikeouts are down. I'm looking for some guys who can generate Ks, and clearly hers can. Turnbull, I feel like folks have kind of like, I can't remember if he threw a no-hitter, not really close to throwing a no-hitter. I can't remember that. But if folks remember, in 2021, before he went down with Tommy John, he made 9 starts, had an ERA under 3 and a whip under 1. He wasn't quite a strikeout per inning, but obviously, you know, it's a small sample. He was 4-2 for a bad Detroit team. And I thought, man, it's too bad that guy went down. It looked like he was breaking out. He doesn't pitch in 2022. He comes back off the heels of Tommy John in 2023, again, for a bad team, and pitches poorly. But like, he was coming back from Tommy John. Let's cut him some slack. This year, normal offseason, normal ramp up. And it looked like he was picking up where he left off back in 2021 before that Tommy John surgery. And that intrigues me. So I thought for sure, like, he'd be almost like scoffed at, like, third guy in this list. You know, whatever, he's a reliever. Maybe he'll get a few starts now. But I'm with you. I'm in on Turnbull. I picked him up this morning, and I dropped Brian Bayo to pick up Turnbull, a player who I was never that impressed with, and I'm happy. I'm fine with cutting. So I do think Turnbull is interesting. So on to the last one here. We got the infield. Going to kind of be rapid fire. There's 3 infielders. 2 of them are third basemen. One is third base, first base, and then the other is a shortstop who we drafted in the top 200. One of them in the top 120, and have just been not great. Brian Hayes is batting 231 in June, 235 for the year. There's a very short spell when he came back from injury where he looked like, oh, here we go. He's doing it. And he was stealing bases. Nope. The plate discipline looks good, which we kind of expect. He's yet to be caught stealing, which is great. But through 225 plate appearances, he has 3 home runs and 5 stolen bases. So that is just not cutting it for Brian Hayes. Jake Berger has been atrocious. He's hitting 210 in June. I bring up the June numbers because, like, it's not getting better, right? Like, we're not seeing improvement. Season long, 216 with just 6 homers, which is definitely not what we expected from Jake Berger. His K rate on the year is 24%, but it's even worse in June at 27%. He's not a guy who gets on base that much. So Jake Berger is somebody who has been dropped in quite a few of my leagues already. And then the last one is Dansby Swanson. I saw a startling statistic about his numbers with the Cubs where, like, he has just been exactly mediocre. He's batting 213 on the year, 230 in June. He does have 8 homers and 5 stolen bases, but that comes with 3 caught stealing in 255 plate appearances. So I haven't been particularly impressed with any of these three. Could it be time to move on from them? I looked at Fantrax rostered in less than 70% for both corner and middle infield. And I'm just, hitting is just tough this year, man. Like, honestly, under 70% corner infielders on Fantrax, I don't know if I'm dropping Hayes or Berger yet. And it's not that I like Hayes or Berger or that I think that, like, you know, there's better days ahead necessarily. I just think maybe there's more likely to be better days ahead for those guys than for some of those guys sitting out there on free agency. Middle infield, I thought was a little better. I know Nick Gonzalez is in the middle of a slump. He doesn't take a lot of walks, but I would at this point rather have Nick Gonzalez than Dansby Swanson. I think Brandon Lau has looked good. He just broke his pinky toe, but he's not even going to land on the IL for it. And he's been getting hot lately. David Hamilton, if I really needed speed, because David Hamilton doesn't quite play every day. He should play every day this week. But he's stealing every time he's on base, he's stealing a base. So I think those three I would consider dropping Dansby Swanson for, certainly those first two, Gonzalez and Lau. But where are we at with Berger, Hayes, and Swanson? Is there anyone in less than 70% of Fantrax leagues, Chad, that you would target to replace them?
So Hayes, I do my massive tweet thread about the mock draft every December, November, or something like that. And when I talked about Hayes at that time, I pointed out that the three highest fly ball rate months of his career were May, August, and September of 2023. So he raised his fly ball rate for his three best months of his year in terms of elevating the ball last year, including the last 2 months. They were all over 40% fly ball rates. The fourth highest of his career, 36.8, was April of 2023. So there you go. His four best fly ball rate months were all last season. He had never been over 35.1% before. All of a sudden, everything is over 36, mostly over 40%. He had never pulled the ball more than 17.4% of the time in a month. He did it over 47% and then over 34% 2 months last year. Like, this was it. We needed him to... People have been saying forever he needs to hit the ball in the air. I kept saying, like, it's not just hitting in the air. He needs to pull the ball too. And he did it last year. He did it. He did it in pieces. It all needed to come together. His fly ball rate this year is 29%. I was super excited about those 4 months over 35% last year. His overall line last year, 39%, was a huge increase. It's 29%. His pull rate went up to only 31% last year, but he had a couple of those months where he was like over 34, over 40%. He's down at 29.6% this year. I don't get it. I'm not sure. It certainly looks like something got fixed with his swing last year, and now he's lost it again. And so I think I have to be out on Hayes, because, like, if he's not, like, this now makes me, like, on the one hand, I'm like, oh, well, he's shown he can do it. And if he starts to do it again, I'll probably buy back in pretty quickly. On the other, it looks to me a little bit like, whatever it was he thought he had found, or I thought he had found, he doesn't actually have. He can't make it stick. And so maybe he really can't be that guy. And so I think I'm out on him, which is sad because I've been really in on him for a long time. And I need to figure out what to do about that, because you're right, there are not good options. Like, I'm looking at the corner infield replacements, and, like, it's Colt brutal. Keith is under 70% rostered, and he's been really good lately. And so I think Colt Keith would be a guy I would look at. Jose Miranda is 41% rostered in Fantrax. He's probably, I think at this point, like, you know, I don't know how I feel long-term. For the next 6 weeks, I'd rather have Miranda in my lineup than Hayes. Beyond that, I don't know. Luke Raley qualifies at first base. Doesn't really help you if you need a third baseman, but Justin Henry Molloy, if he's going to play, has at least got some upside. Same with Tyler Locklear. I don't know. The other name that I'll throw out there as, and he's more of like a stash, but have you looked at the minor league line for Davison De Los Santos this year?
I got him in the Podcasters League. I was very happy about that. $2. Yep. Because that team's a disaster. So
he is destroying the baseball. And the Diamondbacks are a team that obviously had high hopes coming into the season, given they played in the World Series last year. They are not out of it by any means, but not totally in it this year either. I think they're, if I'm right, I think the Padres currently have the last wildcard spot, or do the Diamondbacks have, I don't know.
There's like nine teams all within a half a game.
They're really close. Their point is they are very close to a playoff.
No sellers this year. Yep.
A guy you didn't mention as a possible, sell at third base, probably because his draft cost wasn't high enough, is Eugenio Suarez, who's been awful.
Washed.
And if I go look at the Diamondbacks 40-man roster, and they need to replace Suarez, and they need to replace Suarez, De Los Santos becomes an interesting option for them. I mean, they're already using Blaze Alexander. Kevin Newman, Lawler, if he were healthy, could be an interesting option there.
Yep.
But I don't really see anybody. Now, maybe they don't think Santos can play third. De Los Santos can play third base. That is a concern. I don't know if they believe that he is a third baseman. And if they don't, then none of this matters. But if they think they can put him there, they really shouldn't be that far away from taking a shot on him, because he's been really, really good. He was just a Rule 5 pick. They are going to have to put him on their 40-man soon. I mean, not soon, December, right? They don't have to do it this year. But they're he will get picked in the Rule 5 again if they don't do that. He last played, he has played 6 games at third base in AAA this year. He mostly played third base in AA last year. This year, he was mostly at first base, it looks like, in AA, but has played, AAA, 20 games at first, 6 games at third, 2 games at DH. Those 6 games at third, after not playing it at AA this year, those 6 games at third scream to me that they are trying to figure out if he can take that spot. Now, maybe those 6 games have been a disaster and the determination is no, he can't take that spot. But he is a really interesting guy to watch if you need help at a corner infield spot, because he's just destroying the minors.
Yeah, no, I like that call out a lot. It makes me think maybe he could get called up and at least platoon DH with Jock Peterson, but that would make him a weak side platoon. And I don't know if they'd want to do that to a player this hot in the minor leagues. If they call him up, I imagine it would want to be for everyday playing time. But you're right, he is right on the cusp. I like the call out. And honestly, I think I like him more than any of the other names that were brought up. If I had the ability to just stash someone for a few weeks and see if they got called up, I think I'd rather that than replace Ke'Bryan Hayes or Berger with one of these other names out there.
Colt Keith is the one guy. If you need middle infield or corner infield, Colt Keith has been good lately, and I'm. We know what the talent is with Keith. There's a reason the Tigers signed Keith to a contract before he made his debut. And he has been, he's cooled off recently. His June has been pretty bad. He was great in May. He had a 151 WRC plus in May. He's gotten cold again, although the last week has been better. I don't know. If you look at Keith dating back to late April, he's been basically a league average hitter since April 26th ish. He's been a 113 WRC plus since May 6th. I think that there's like that bat's there. And so Keith is the guy who, you know, I think the power will grow. I think he can get put up pretty decent average and on base numbers. He's not quite there yet, but I don't know. You know, since May, what did I say? Since May 6th, that 113 WRC plus, 295 average, 328 on base, only three home runs, just two stolen bases, but like it's a pretty good little run there. And I think there's more talent. So he's the guy who, if I had to get someone now, if I couldn't wait on De Los Santos, he's the guy I would go for.
All right. So I want to end it with a ranking of these four middle infielders. And we're going to do it basically over the next 3 years. So let's say you had Dansby Swanson for a 10th round pick, or you could have Brandon Lau on a last round pick, or you could have, who was the first name I mentioned there? Nick Gonzalez on a last round pick, or you could have David Hamilton on a last round pick the next three seasons, including the rest of this year. So this year, then 2025, 2026, you're in your keeper leagues, trying to make a decision. Rank those four guys.
It was Swanson, Lau, Hamilton, and
Gonzalez.
Yeah. I mean, 3 years is a long time.
Like 2.5.
I don't know if I don't. I guess the serious thing is, like, does David Hamilton have a job next year other than being a pinch runner and defensive replacement? Like,
I don't think so. Marcelo Meyer is very close.
Yeah. So I really like Hamilton. I think he has to be last if you're talking that long on a time horizon, because I just don't think he's a regular major league player. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a star base.
He's a valuable specialist. And so if it was just this year, I might put him at the top.
Sure. Wow.
But okay. No, not long term. But I think it's probably, I don't know what any of these guys. I take none.
None is certainly an option. I'm surprised you're so out on Brandon Lau. He's gotten hot recently. I think he's one of the most, if not the most powerful second baseman, if we're not counting Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
And that's just something.
That is something. He is, like, I don't know. He's going to hit you, 10 home runs the rest of the year with maybe 12, with probably a very low batting average, not a very impressive on-base percentage. He's not really going to steal you any bases, maybe a couple here or there.
The only place I'd push back.
And then you add in the injury risk.
I think he could have a lot more. The injury risk is going to be there. The homers, I could see him eclipsing 20 to 25 homers this year, which from second base is not nothing. For what it's worth, he has a 112 WRC plus the season, despite, you know, the start that he got off to. So I think for me, it would be Gonzalez first, and then the difference in keeper value, because if you have the conversation was, have we cut Dansby Swanson? Do we cut Dansby Swanson? So if you haven't cut him, I'm assuming he's at like a 10th. And would I rather have Dansby Swanson on a 10th rest of season for the next 2 years, assuming there's some kind of inflation, or would I rather have Brandon Lau rest of season and for free basically the next two? So I think I'd go Gonzalez, Lau, Dansby, Hamilton. But you're right. I'm not enamored with any of these names. I just like those.
I think Lau is first or second on this list. I just think, for him to get to 20 home runs on the year, 15 more the rest of the way, he needs to get to like another 300, 350 plate appearances, and I don't see that happening.
Sure. Yeah. He's a guy who historically has been pretty platoony.
And platoony, and like, he's had injury issues over the last couple mm-hmm. years. So I don't know. I am...
He's playing with a broken pinky toe, so you're not wrong.
Right. And so, like, is he going to keep playing through that and not be able to hit because of it? I don't know. Is he going to end up needing an IL stint at some point? I don't know. I have questions. I'll say that. Sure. I have questions.
It's totally fair. So we're obviously up against it, folks. One of our longer episodes for sure. Hopefully this helped. I know there's a lot of tough decisions to be made. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you again next Monday.